Jonathan, did you see that our favorite benevolent dictator is having jabs at Matt Mullenweg again on the Lex Friedman podcast?
I'm not sure DHH is my favorite benevolent dictator.
DHH is my spirit animal.
I have not listened to it. I am intrigued, but I have a general aversion to anything that I perceive as overly popular. So, which is my own problem.
So you don't like Crossword anymore?
Okay, well, no, we're still a nice little niche, so that's acceptable.
All right. Yeah, no, DHH had, just a few friendly jabs, I think. I think he's feeling it,
If I called you a mad king, would you consider that to be a friendly jab?
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure. Right. Between friends, you should hear what my mates call me. I think DHH is feeling it. I think he recognizes that there's something bigger at stake here. WordPress is at stake, but also the way that people feel about open source is at stake. I feel like that used to be a thing going into sales calls, right? Going into an enterprise environment, meeting with the chief technology officer, the chief digital officer, and saying, oh yeah, no, WordPress, it's open source. Big plus, right? Mm. Not so much anymore.
There does seem to have been a shift. I at least like to think that it's not that deep of a shift, that people who've been true believers are still true believers. I still believe in open source. I consider that a positive, but it does seem like there's been at least a surface level shift in sentiment.
Do you think Matt is likely to respond? There was a bit of a call to lay down arms, to surrender, to give it all up. What do you think? Is it going to happen?
This has reminded me of the little bit of blogging back and forth that took place between DHH and Matt, which I don't think that was all that helpful. So, I don't know. I guess I wouldn't be too surprised if Matt responded.
I think it is helpful. It's not helpful for Matt, but what it does is it validates the community, right? Like that people are feeling this and people are
you talking about the same community that Matt referenced as being like making the decisions with him?
Oh man, let's come back to that. That drives me nuts. But rightly so, we wonder, well, maybe we got this wrong. Maybe he has more context than us of what's happening behind the scenes. Maybe this is all in our best interest. Maybe, just maybe, we've got this wrong. And having another person at that level, another benevolent dictator, BDFL, sort of say, yeah, no, this isn't okay. I think that's really validating for the community members out there who are feeling estranged through Matt's actions.
This is making me like a little sad to remember, fuzzily, but Matt's commentary, but a lot of Matt's response was more akin to like, what have you done, DHH? Well, where's Ruby these days? And it was, I'm not sure that line of inquiry wasn't, I don't know.
It didn't pretty rude.
Inspire much confidence in me.
Yeah. But I mean, a jab and then a return hook is completely reasonable, really.
I think you're onto something, though. We had John Gruber on recently, and I found it refreshing to hear him reference that he considers Matt a friend. He's an outside observer. He doesn't have the closeness that we've got to this. And Gruber himself was like, if he could take Matt aside, he would ask him, like, hey, what's going on? Like, something didn't smell right about all this.
Yeah, doesn't seem right, yeah. And then, I mean, speaking of not smelling right, not sitting right, what Matt said about recently, he said on another podcast, what was it?
The one with Decoder, Patel. I think it is.
Yeah. He said, this was a community decision to go up against WP Engine.
Right. And I'm like, I don't remember being a part of that decision.
I am a member of the community. I really do feel I am a member of the community. And it was out of nowhere. It was a complete surprise. And right. If anybody I know was asked, they would tell you, no, WP Engine contributes a lot.
And Luke, as soon as I said that Like, as soon as my response was, well, I don't remember that. I wasn't involved in that. I had this voice in the back of my head to where it's like, well, Matt could just respond and say, well, that's because you're not a member of the community, Jonathan. And to me, I'm like, man, so what does it take? 20 years? Is that not enough? Like at what point are you a member or not a member of something? And I think that's part of the problem. It's a very nebulous.
Yeah. And Neil, I was right though, to push back on Matt, and he said, well, you've been always about decisions in the open. That's your thing, right?
Right.
And he was really clever. He put that up front and he said, do you still do that? And Matt said, yeah, yeah. And so then he said, well, where was this decision made in the open? Right. Show me the Slack logs. Show me the P2 posts, you know, the community comments. It never happened. And this is the definition of gaslighting.
Mm. Well, and from my perspective, part of it too was like when those first couple of posts came out from Matt on .org, to me, there may have been someone else who looked at them. And to me, they very clearly were like, Matt wrote this and executed. Like, he made this call. This didn't seem like something that Josefa would have been involved in, for instance, even though right. She was the director at the time. And it's like unilateral action.
Yeah, she seemed
action.
Surprised by it.
Yes. She publicly called out, this is the first time that I'm hearing about like a certain decision or not. And that unilateral action, I think, was at the heart of what many of us found so upsetting. He set some initial context with the blog post and then jumped into unilateral, at least what seemed like unilateral action. But for him to now say it was us as a community doing it, it's like, well, there may have been people who were saying thumbs up. And I would hope that I wouldn't have been one of those in that situation, but it's hard. I don't want to judge those who may have done so, but it certainly felt like someone was coming in and exercising the dictator part. Especially yeah. strong without the benevolence.
We'll reach out, Jonathan, for season 10 to DHH, invite him on the show. We've had Ryan Singer on before. So, you know, who's a good friend of David. So, but I want to ask you, did you see the news with the plugin review team's name change?
I did. I was happy to see this. You, of course, have been on the plugin team, formerly the plugin review team, for like over a year and a half now.
The team formerly known as the plugin review team, yeah.
It's a team that always has held a soft spot in my heart, even before you got involved. Mika Epstein did huge amounts of work on that over the years, and I was happy to see when more people began to get involved and the scope of it expanded. Now, you guys do quite a few things, not just reviewing plugins, but you also work on tools, and I guess how would you describe like the scope of the team today?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think of us as the custodians of the plugin directory.
Okay.
Because what we do includes plugin review for new plugins, also increasingly more plugin review for updates. That's something that I'd like to touch on actually also, but then also security, people with questions about transferring ownership and all of that sort of thing, as well as all of the tooling, both internal and public tooling that we publish, for example, the plugin check plugin.
Okay, so for those who don't know, let's walk through an example here. Let's say I spin up Cursor and I vibe code a sweet new WordPress plugin, and I'm like, the world's got to have this one. I go ahead and submit it to the directory. What happens next?
You wait next. You wait to have your turn in the queue, and then someone like myself will reply and say, hey, these are some changes that we suggest for your plugin.
Now, are you guys just throwing that into your own like ChatGPT and coming right back with something, or like what's going on behind the scenes there?
Yeah, we don't use any AI. We do use some AI to identify trademarked plugin names, actually.
Yep.
So for identifying trademarks, we do. But aside from that, none of the code review is done by AI for the simple reason that AI is not as good as pre-written tests. We just have a series of scripts that run across a code base and output results that we then can email you. course, we check over the results because there are often false positives. And we provide you with tools to be able to check the results yourself, which is called the plugin check plugin. And
it's actually a pretty sweet plugin. I've played with that. Okay, so I submit my plugin. I get feedback from a volunteer on the team. I then like, oh, wow, there's a real person here. I go in and make the changes. I get it resubmitted. Then finally, I get it approved. This updates thing, does every time I need to do a new update, is that, what's the current state today? Is that manually checked or like, how does that work?
We don't check updates, no. So we rely on user reports for problems with updates. And those will either be in the form of security issues, which do happen from time to time. And they'll be reported to us by users or a patch stack or someone like that. Or occasionally plugin authors just do real dodgy stuff that nobody really likes and users complain about it to us and we check it out. And sometimes we'll email a plugin author and say, hey, you said that your plugin was going to do this and then you changed it. Now it does that. Please change it back or we'll close your plugin permanently. Things like that.
Right, because it seems like something that's especially ripe for manipulation if it's not being monitored, right?
That's right,
I'm guessing, at least historically, there's been a lot of, there's a degree of good faith that you're operating on. But if something grows and increases, I think the incentive to try and game the system just seems like it goes up.
Yeah, and one thing that we're experimenting with at the moment is using some tools to run against updates and against the diffs and the code that was changed and give a bit of a score. And then we'll just check the highest likelihood of problematic code scores, you know,
to do
things like that. Maybe even down the track, we might hold a plugin update for review. We might say, thanks for submitting your update. We're going to review this one. Please hold while we do that. We're not currently doing that, but maybe we might as we get faster and as the queue reduces. And the other big news and that's kind of exciting is at the moment, one thing that's being worked on is a delayed rollout of updates or an incremental rollout. That's pretty cool too.
Yeah, what does that mean? I saw, and that's something that Matt himself got involved in directly, if I'm recalling.
Yeah. I mean, it was proposed by someone a few years ago and ignored and then on track. And then Matt also suggested it. I think behind the scenes, I think that it's okay for me to say this. I'm pretty sure behind the scenes, Elementor are the ones who were really sort of pushing for this change.
Okay.
And Elementor, they contribute a lot back to Core, including sponsoring me on the plugins team. So thanks, Elementor. And so I think that they were sort of pushing for this update, pushing for this change. And so that ticket has been created and is now being worked on by automaticians.
What's the point of the change?
Oh, it's going to be really cool. So you can already do this with like the App Store with Apple or Android. You say, I'm not 100% sure about this update. What we'll do is we'll roll it out incrementally and see if there are any bugs or problems. And so we will release the 10%, give it a few days, or I don't know what the time increments are, and then release a little bit more and a little bit more until we get to 100%. And that way, if there is a problem, maybe you catch it before all of your users are experiencing it. It's especially useful for plugins with a large amount of installs.
You know, the thing that still sits uncomfortably with me with all this, like, I think that's also great. At the back of my mind, Luke, there's this like, man, what are the financial incentives? What you're describing is something that an app store does, right? And they also have a whole business model around that. And yet today, .org still famously doesn't really encourage commercial plugins, or it kind of does, but at least it feels like it's an odd thing that still relies on volunteers. There's not real direct money connected to it in any obvious ways.
Yeah, you know, Jonathan, I do believe that a commercial .org would be beneficial. I'd love to see .org take sales and take a 20% cut and give that back to WordCamps. I think that would just really be huge for the community. But I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.